Let's just say a few more words about the topic that we started yesterday. We're talking about the question of under what circumstances, if any, do the rabbis change the fulfillment of a mitzvah on a fundamental level? Do they say that if they impose a restriction or a enhancement to the mitzvah, that not only does that constitute a mitzvah derabanan, but that redefines the mitzvah min haTorah? So much so that if one fails to observe the mitzvah in its rabbinic regulation, then maybe one wouldn't even fulfill the mitzvah min haTorah. We mentioned that there possibly might be a distinction between mitzvahs like Kiddush and Berachas HaMazon, where there's a mitzvah d'oraisa, but the rabbis put a greater burden on. So, for example, when it comes to Kiddush, it's very likely that the obligation of wine, the obligation of Kiddush Makom Suda, that's Rabbanan. And maybe one still might say that one is only Yosei Mahatorah if one fulfills all the rules, neither Rabbanan. Or in addition to that, we have certain situations where Chazal put a Gezeirah d'Rabbanan because of the fear of some problem, such as the situation of a shofar on Shabbos, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, and Chazal prohibited the blowing of the shofar, even though the Torah obligates the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, regardless of what day of the week it is. So there are those who maintain that if Chazal offers something because of a concern of Isser, so then that would have to be understood as saying the mitzvah is no longer there. It wouldn't make sense to say that they prohibited it, but the mitzvah could still be fulfilled. While in the case of a positive mitzvah that's been enhanced, maybe at least the mitzvah still continues to exist on a d'oraisa level. We mentioned that you could also see a svara to say the opposite way, that a gezeirah is something external to the mitzvah, while here, if they redefine what the mitzvah is, then maybe that should be something more fundamental. Well, you could see it perhaps either way. And all of this impacting on our Mishnah, that the Mishnah considers the possibility is debate whether or not there is the gezeirah of chatzos by kriyashma. Do we say that there is an obligation to say Shema before Chatzos, even if in HaTorah the mitzvah could go all night? And the opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah was that if Chachamim were followed, which he disagrees with, but if Chachamim maintain that Kriyat Shema has to be before Chatzos, then after Chatzos the mitzvah is gone. We discussed yesterday a little bit some of the unique attributes of that formulation, how it really is unprecedented and builds on this whole Akira Stavim and HaTorah idea in an unusual way. Maybe we'll just mention two or three more points about that and then move on. First of all, one interesting example of the whole question of whether the mitzvah is still there or not. There is a whole discussion we talked about yesterday. For example, somebody would blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah in the case that we talked about. So even though they're not supposed to do that, but do we say at least he fulfills a mitzvah? As Rebbe Eger suggests, at least there is a mitzvah fulfilled, even if it was prohibited to do that. We mentioned the shaila, if somebody takes a lulav on the first day of Sukkot when it's Shabbos, does he make a shachiyonah the second day if he's never done it before? Or do we say that no, he was in fulfillment on the first day? So there is an interesting discussion in Sefer HaEshkol. Rabbi Chaim Wasserman talks about this in his essay about Akiras Dovim and HaTorah. Sefer HaEshkol has the following question. It's an interesting example of this whole discussion.
Sefer HaEshkol is Rabbi Chaim Wasserman?
No, Sefer HaEshkol is one of the Rishonim. But Rabbi Chaim Wasserman talks about this discussion of the Sefer HaEshkol has the following question. The Gemara Menachos gives an example of the rabbis being an Oker Davim and HaTorah. We mentioned that the whole shofar on Rosh Hashanah thing is the most famous example, but in Shas it's not explicitly connected with this principle. We assume that it's an example of this principle, but the Gemara actually doesn't give it as an example of this principle. And one example the Gemara does give is the following idea, that according to Torah law, if one has a garment that is made out of linen, and therefore you want to attach tzitzis to the garment, so you're going to attach wool tzitzis, it's going to create shatness. Nonetheless, you're supposed to do that. The mitzvah of tzitzis overrides the prohibition of shadness. So according to Torah law, you would wear tzitzis in such a case, even when that means creating shadness in this garment. However, the rabbi said, don't do it. The rabbi has prohibited this. And the Gemara says they have a number of concerns. They were worried, and the Gemara lists maybe three or four concerns. They were worried you wear this garment at night when there's no chiyuv of tzitzis. They were worried that maybe the garment would rip in such a way that it's not obligated in tzitzis. In all these scenarios, you'll have shatnas without the mitzvah of tzitzis. So even though theoretically, if you're fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, that outweighs shatnas, but the Chazal were afraid a number of scenarios could come up where you'd end up with shatnas and without tzitzis, so Chazal prohibited it. So let me ask you the following question. It's a fascinating question. Let's say somebody were to ignore this dictate of Chazal. Somebody were to say, I want to follow the Torah law, and I'm going to put tzitzis on this garment. So would that person be liable for malchus, for shatnas? Person is violating the issue of shatnas. Normally a person who violates shatnas is chayav malchus. Does that apply to this guy? So it depends how you understand what's going on. Do we say, well, normally the mitzvah of tzitzis pushes away the issue of shatnas? So that's true here also. Chazal told him not to do it. Chazal said, we don't want you to do this, but Lamais, if he's doing it, he's not in violation of shatnas because the mitzvah of tzitzis knocked it out. Or do we say no? There is no mitzvah of tzitzis here. Chazal got rid of the mitzvah. Therefore, this person who's wearing shatnas is no better than any other person wearing shatnas in history. This is no different than a non-tzitzis shatnas case. Since Chazal said not to do it, they negated the mitzvah completely. So that was a discussion, a suffix that Sefer Eshkol has. And Bukharin discusses this in his Sefer as an example of the whole question of whether, and he mentions that with Chaim Soloveitchik, because Rabbi had a different understanding of what the issue was at stake, but that seems to very much reflect this question. If Chazal say, don't do a mitzvah, is that mitzvah uprooted? Is it gone? Or is it there, but just they told you not to do it? So we suggested yesterday that this could all depend on a broader question of how we understand the Suri Darabana. Do we understand that there is a ability on the part of Chazal not only to instruct Jews to behave a certain way, but also to operate on the broader plane, to essentially give a status to objects we call an Isser Chetzah, to maybe even rewrite the Torah, so to speak, so that there's no longer a certain mitzvah if they say it doesn't apply? How far does Chazal's authority go? Now, we mentioned it as a popular approach among the Achronim, that it's attributed to the Nesivis, and the Orsameh says this, and the Chasam Sofer, and many others. They understand that all rabbinical prohibitions are what we call an Isser Gavra, are an instruction on the individual alone, because the rabbis have authority over Jewish people, but not over items. They can't create an Isser Chetzah, so they can't make an item inherently bad. They can't change a mitzvah in the Torah. If the Torah says this is a mitzvah, they're not going to be able to negate that. While there is the view of Rav Yosef Engel, who understood more expansively that when Chazal make a gzeira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu signs off on it, God endorses it, and therefore that creates an isser in the object. That could perhaps create a different understanding of what the mitzvah in the Torah is. So that would allow perhaps for a broader understanding. And to give an interesting illustration of that, just of the view, the first view that we mentioned, that there is no real inherent isser in Mitzvah Rabbanan, Rabbi Chanan Washman also elsewhere has a comment to the Tosfos in Maseches Yevamos. It's a fascinating idea that we know that if a Kohen is in a building, and let's say there's a dead body in the building, so we know the Kohen has to leave right away. Right? The Kohen can't be in a place with Tumah. But let's say it's only a Tumah Drabana. Let's say it's not Mamish, a dead body. It's something that a Kohen is prohibited on the level of Midrabana. from being the same room with. So there, Tosfos seems to suggest the Kohen has to leave, but he doesn't have to run. He can walk. What's the difference there? So we're going to put a speedometer on him. It's all a question of mileage. Well, what does that mean? So if it's Minatorah, he's got to run at this speed. And if it's Midrabanan, he can walk at this speed. How do you understand that? So Bochanan explained. He said that he thought there's a fundamental difference between an Isser Daraisa and an Isser Darabanan. That an Isser Daraisa is spiritually harmful to the Kohen, to anyone, but in this case it's Nisr Kahuna. So therefore the Kohen's got to leave as quickly as possible, so he shouldn't be around this problem. But when you have a rabbinical issue, an issue Darabanan, so then it's not that there's an Isser Chetzis, or some of the object is inherently bad for him. It's that there's a prohibition to rebel against the rabbis. There's a prohibition to ignore the rabbinic direction. So if he's leaving, even if he's leaving slowly, he's not in rebellion, he's not ignoring. So as long as he's in the process of leaving, it doesn't matter how long it takes, because he is fulfilling his personal responsibility to listen to the rabbinic directives. I think a good way to illustrate it is it's the difference between a fire and a fire drill. If you knew there was a fire in the building, so you'd run out as quickly as possible, so as not to get burnt by the fire. But when there's a fire drill, so nobody runs out of the building, everyone gets up and walks, but they're not running because they know there's no real fire, but they know they have to listen, they have to follow the rules, so everyone leaves. So too, it seems to be that's how he understands this, that Nisad Rabbanan doesn't create a new spiritual danger, it just creates a responsibility to listen, so as long as you're leaving, you're leaving. So it could be that there is a relationship between this idea and the question of whether or not Chazal, when they make a regulation, whether or not it takes the mitzvah status away completely.
Does Rav Chanan Wasserman agree with Tennessee
Rose's report? He doesn't discuss it in that context as far as I recall. Yeah, he could discuss it elsewhere. He has a number of essays that's printed in Sefer Kovetz Yerim that he goes through. It's called Quintus Divrei Sofer, and he goes through a lot about how rabbinical authority is enacted. There's a lot to say about this. It's a little bit of a intricate discussion how the different parts come together, but I'm not sure if he necessarily makes the connection between the two, but I think there is what to say for the connection. So we'll just maybe mention one last point about this, specifically back to our point about Kriya Shema. So in terms of the Gzeira of Kriya Shema, so we mentioned that on one extreme you have, let's say, the Rosh and the Shulchan Aruch, who don't think there's a Gzeira at all. They say the Chachil, you can say Kriya Shema all night. And another extreme, you have Rabbi Yonah, who also doesn't think it was Gzeira, but thinks that if Chachamim were right, if there was a Gzeira according to them, it would mean that not only is there a Gzeira, but there's no mitzvah at all after Chatzos. But in the middle, you have, let's say, the Rambam. Right? The Rambam, who says that there is a Gzeira, you should try to say Kriya Shema before Chatzos, but he doesn't take the mitzvah off the table after Chatzos. But that's in contrast with his view by Hekta Chalav and Ve'evarim. The same thing the Mishnah talks about burning the fats and limbs. So there, the Rambam holds there is a Gzeir, and you're not allowed to do it after Chatzos. While Rashi, as we saw, so there wasn't even a Gzeir to begin with. So what's the difference, according to the Rambam, between Kriya Shema, which he says is a Gzeir, but you can still do it after Chatzos, and burning the fats in the limbs where there's a Gzeira and it's done? So there's a long essay about this in the Sefer Avi Ezri. Avi Ezri is Rav Shach. This piece was actually written by his son-in-law. His son-in-law is Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman. There's a Sefer on Chumash called Shari Ora. So Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman has an essay, it's printed in the Avi Ezri, where he explains that when it comes to Hekta Chalav and Vevarim, so we have an Isser problem. There's a problem of a prohibition. The prohibition called nosar. If you're going to have something that's left around too long, so then that's not only a negation of a mitzvah, that's an issue. So therefore, Chazal had to be more active. They had to say, we completely take this off the table after Chatzos, because we're worried that you might violate a prohibition. When it comes to Kriya Shema, so there's no real risk of violating a prohibition. All there is this mitzvah itself, and the worst thing that could happen is you could omit the mitzvah itself. So therefore, there's no point in Chazal prohibiting it after Chatzos. They could say l'chachila, it should be before Chatzos. But after Chatzos, the mitzvah might as well still be there because there isn't any potential isser that's involved in missing it.
And unless you consider the whole gzera to prevent him from being negligent.
Right, but what does negligent mean? If negligent doesn't mean you're going to be violating any law, it means you will be omitting this mitzvah of Shema. And again, the language is still strong, v'harchik adam min ha'avera, but still, at the end of the day, we're dealing with a positive mitzvah. And as we alluded to before, this is presumably seems to be some kind of statement of the importance of this mitzvah, that usually we don't find gezeiros by a positive mitzvah, and apparently Kriyat Shema has a unique status as far as this is concerned. Okay, so let's try to go a little bit into the Gemara now, and I would like to at least start today. We'll see if we finish. I want to get up to the next page. There is a Tosfos that brings us into the whole question of Shkia and Pesach Yochavim, and we'll see if how far we get with it today. We'll probably end up finishing on Friday. So let's look at the Gemara. So the Gemara asks about the Mishnah. So Tana Hechakai, where is this Tana? Where is the author of the Mishnah standing? Where is he coming from? Why is he assuming that there is what to talk about in terms of Kriyat Shema and in terms of night and day? Where is this whole thing coming from? So Diksani Me'imasai, so why does it assume that there's some obligation that it could ask, when does this obligation start? V'tu, Ma'ishna, D'tani Ba'arvis B'reisha, L'sidishayachvis B'reisha. Why do we have to start talking about the nighttime first? Let's talk about the morning first. And again, we said this is a concept which, if you grow up Jewish and keeping Shabbos and the like, so it's not going to surprise you so much. But here, the first daf in Shas, so it introduces this concept. It asks this question: why do we start talking about the night before the daytime? So the Gemara says, "So Tana Ekra Kai." So the question of the order, so and also the obligation of Shema, so is coming from Chumash, because the pasuk says, "Tichsev b'shachlucha uvekumecha." Which does seem to be a pretty strong support to the majority of you in Rishonim that this is a mitzvah d'oraisa to say Kriyat Shema at night and during the daytime. That was what we talked about during our introductory discussion. V'hachiksani. So this is really what the Mishnah is asking. Zman Kriyat Shema d'shchiva emas. When is the time of Kriyat Shema of the Shachtucha, of lying down? Mishah shekohanim nichnasim le'achal b'trumasan. From the time that the kohanim go in to eat the truma. So from the pasuk of Kriyat Shema, we can already see both the obligation and the order, Shachtucha first and Kumecha. But then the Gemara says, you buy your same if you want, I'll tell you, Yalef Mibriyasa Shalom. We could also look at the creation. What does the Torah say in the context of creation? Dechsev, Vayere, Vayiboker, Yom Echad. That there also we find that the Torah talks about night first and then day, and that seems to be the way in which we view things.
So, that seems a bit better. That should have come first.
Right, so why does that not come first? So apparently we're more interested in using a Kriyat Shema pasuk. But the Gemara is making the point that in terms of the general order of things, there is also such a priority as well. So Yehachi Seifa Diksani said, and what about the Seifa? Seifa usually means the second half of the Mishnah. In our Gemara, this is printed as two separate Mishnayot. So what about the later part of the discussion that comes later? That comes towards the end of the parak? Diksani B'shachar Mevarech Shtayim Ufaneha V'yachas L'achareha. That in Kriyat Shema in the morning, so we say two brachos before and one brach after. Two before and two after. So why doesn't it say there as well? Follow the same order. Talk about Meirah first. Tana pasuk ba'arvis v'hadar tani b'shachris. So the author of the Mishnah first started talking about Meirah and then went to Shachris. Adikai b'shachris. Parshmili d'shachris. So had the parshmili d'arvis. Once it was in the subject of Shachris, so then it continued telling us all the rules of Shachris before coming back to Meirah. Okay. That's the first section in the Gemara. So let's go on a little bit. It says, Amar Ma'ar Mishah Shekahan Nechnasim Le'achal B'Shum Asim. So the Mishnah, as we've been saying, the Mishnah has kind of a roundabout way of telling us Tzeitzah Kochavim for Kriyat Shema. Instead of just saying when Kriyat Shema starts at Tzeitzah Kochavim, which, as we spent some time discussing, is a very significant marker because it doesn't seem to correlate to how the shuls often daven Ma'ariv, that instead of just saying Tzeitzah Kochavim, so the Mishnah says from the time that the Kohanim go in to eat the Truma. So says the Gemara, Michtei Kohanim, Emas ka'achli truma. Since the Kohanim, when is it that they eat the truma? Mishas tseisa kochavim, from the time of tseisa kochavim. So why doesn't the Mishnah just say that? Listening mishas tseisa kochavim, wouldn't that be an easier way to address it? So says the Gemara, milsag avorche kamash malon. The Gemara, the Mishnah is trying to tell you something else. In addition, Yagdol Tar V'yad, there is also throwing another lesson into the story. Kohanim emes ka'achli b'truma. When do the Kohanim eat truma? Mishas tseisa kochavim. This is from the time of tseisa kochavim. So what exactly are we talking about when we say that they're eating the truma? So we mean that if you look at the first Rashi over there, the Mishnah, Kohanim shenitmu'u, right? Not down that they only eat at that time, but we're talking about Kohanim who had become tameh. So until now they couldn't eat truma. The tavlu, and again this is the Rashi at the very beginning of the Mishnah, they went to the mikvah, the hariv shemshan, and then the sun has set. So v'higia itam lechol b'truma. So now they've gone through the process that allows them to eat truma again post tuma. So really, as the Gemara will fill later, but the point is not so much when they're eating; it's a really combination of factors. The Gemara is going to get involved in that discussion also about what time you eat dinner in general, what time people eat dinner. But here we're interested in kind of a combination of factors. They're eating dinner, but they're eating dinner specifically in the context of not having been mutter b'truma beforehand. So they were tameh, so they couldn't eat truma, and now they're ending the process of being able to eat truma. So the Gemara says we can see some other details about this process here. What does this teach us? The kapara lo ma'akva. That what is the significant principle that allows them to eat truma? That you might think that, okay, the day has to end, the seventh day has to end, the eighth day has to start, so that's the sun setting, which we'll use the broad term of the sun setting, for the day to end. But you might think that not only does that have to happen, but they have to wait till the next day when they bring the korban, which is called here kapara. So the lesson is, we see that's not true. We see they don't have to wait till the next day to have brought the korban, but the fact that the day seventh day ends, that's enough. They can go right into eat truma then. So you see, kamashmo the kapara lo ma'akva, that the bringing of the korban does not impede their ability. The absence, the fact that it hasn't happened yet, that does not stop them from eating truma. Kedetanya uva hashemesh v'toher, as the pasuk says, and we'll translate it vaguely because the Gemara is going to have a whole discussion of what it means. The sun comes and boom, they're pure, they're tar. So, b'yasham shomak vasom ilechol b'truma, a crucial integral element is the sun has to set, we'll say, in order for them to eat truma. Ve'ein kaparasom akvo mislechol b'trumaso. But waiting for the carbon the next morning, that is not integral. They can eat tonight without waiting till tomorrow morning. So then the Gemara asks, well, how do we know we're reading the pasuk right? The pasuk really mean that the sun sets and they're purified? And the day is purified. How do we know that this pasuk "Vah Hashemesh" means the? It sounds like it means the coming of the sun. Really means the going of the sun. The sun setting. The "Hay V'Tar Tar Yoma," and then the phrase "V'Tar" means the day has become purified. The change of day is what affects the status. Half of the days. Dilma bias orohu. Maybe it means, which fits the words a little better, that the sun is coming up in the morning. The presence of the light is what we're talking about. Uvah Hashemesh means it's getting light in the morning. Umay v'toyer v'toyer gavra. And not that the day is now, a new day is being cleared away, so to speak, or an old day is cleared away, a new day is coming in. But the tar is referring to the individual. The individual, his status changes in the morning when he's going to be able to bring the korban.
Abel
and will bring the korban, but we'll first identify.
Well, it's not the
Shemesh. Right. Well, for the day comes, and then he does what he needs to do in order to be.
That depends on him, and not on the Shemesh.
Right, but that's what the Gemara is assuming. The Gemara is assuming that once he's in the zone to be able to do that, so then we can identify that as the reference. So you see, Rashi says, and Tosus is going to read this Gemara differently, but Rashi says, Dilma bias oro, what does that mean? Sheyar Hashemesh biyom hashmini, that the sun will come up on the eighth day. V'yitar ha'ish atzmo,
So we're not talking about the day, we're talking about the person himself. Behavaz kabanosav v'achar yochal, that he'll bring his korban and then after that he will eat. So maybe that's how we should read the pasuk. So that's the question. The Gemara says, "Amar Rabba Bar Rav Sheva, Im Kain Le Makra V'Itaher, My V'Itaher V'Itar." That says Rav Sheva that if that's what his case, the pasuk says should have said V'Itar. What is V'Itaher? Tar Yoma. That doesn't seem like it's the right construct to be talking about the individual. That's talking about the day being cleared away, so it makes more sense that it means the previous day ending. Kitamri Inshi, as the expression goes, Irav Shimshav Itki Yoma. The sun comes down and the day clears away. So that's really how the pasuk should be read. And then the Gemara just goes on to say that Bama Rava in the West and Eretz Yisrael had the Rabba Barashay Lo Shmi Elohu. They didn't hear this word that he explained. And they asked the same question. Hi Uvo Hashemesh Bia Shamshahu. So do we say that Bia Uvo Hashemesh refers to the sun setting? Umay Vitar Tar Yoma, and the Vitar means the day is being cleared. O Dilma Bias Arohu. Or do we say no? Maybe it means the sun coming up in the morning. Umay Vitar Tar Gavra. And what does it mean that that there is some purity happening? That's referring to the person. And they are able to answer it from looking at a b'risa, and extended b'risa. Similar davar seisakochavim. That what is the clue that this is happening? Seisakochavim. Shmamina biyashamshahu. So apparently seisakochavim is the clue. So that means we're talking about the sun coming slash going. Or my v'tayr tar yoma. And so what does v'tayr mean? That refers to the day. So without getting into some of the nitty-gritty of the debate, so we saw Rashi, who explains the alternative interpretation, the one that's rejected. But in this context, so Tosus, we're not going to go into it inside, but this first Tosus in Omid Beis, Dilma, Tosus takes issue with Rashi. He doesn't think that that's the correct reading of the alternate possibility. And in the context of that, this Tosus is very significant. It's one of a number of Tosfos that are significant. But this Tosfos, based on the days, is one of the Tosfos in where Rabbeinu Tam expresses his opinion, which is the basis for what's colloquially known as Rabbeinu Tam Zman. The idea that, let's say, here the shul will announce that Shabbos ends whatever time it ends, but some will have the practice of waiting to a significantly later time in order to end Shabbos, either fully or at least as far as Dinim D'oraisa are concerned. So what is the basis of that whole practice? What's the whole idea of there being different conceptions of when, let's say, Shabbos is over? The idea of Rabbeinu Tam Zman, as it's colloquially known.
Tam Levitt, which date?
So his man, or what's attributed to him, and we'll see it's a little bit of a imprecise phrase, but the idea that Shabbos will end, not necessarily, let's say, for example, slightly different ways of calculating it, but let's say most shuls will end Shabbos around 40 minutes after Shkia. But there'll be those who will wait to a significantly later...
What year did he live in?
Rabbeinu Tam was a grandson of Rashi. Rashi died 1105.
That was before the clocks were made.
Yeah, it was way before.
So how do they know? 40 minutes, 50 minutes?
Yeah, so that's also a part of the discussion. How exactly do you calculate? There's ways to calculate, but it's clearly a whole different level of perception of time than we have today.
You can understand.
Correct. So the question of what does Tzei Sakochavim even mean? In terms of...
You take it literally. Tzei Sakochavim, you see three stars.
How big are the stars? Where do we see them?
Okay, let's say you don't make an issue. You see three stars and finish.
It's a big issue, though. It's a very different time.
Okay, but here, we say it's 40 minutes with Tzei Sakochavim. Mm-hmm. 30 minutes. Where do you make this calculation?
Well, you can figure out time without a clock, though, because the time is, they used to calculate time, as we'll see, by how long it takes to walk a certain, distance. You have that conception of how long... Yeah, there's different ways to figure out how time fits into the proportion of the day, which is really a major part of this discussion. That just to try to set up, we'll sort of set the basic elements, and then we'll continue on Friday. So essentially, there is a issue as follows: that we need to figure out when does a day change from one day to the next. When does it become nighttime, essentially?
If we already saw from that Beis Med Aleph that night is when we start our day. We don't start our day in the morning, we start it at night. But when is that point? When is the point when we switch from one day to the next? And this, of course, has tremendous halachic implications for many, many different halachos. But even within all those many halachos, we could group them into two different categories. And they may have different answers. It may be that the halacha recognizes different answers to different parts of the question. One reason we need to know is because there are nighttime mitzvahs and there are daytime mitzvahs. So we need to know whether it's night or day to know if a daytime mitzvah can be fulfilled or a nighttime mitzvah can be fulfilled. If a bris milah can only be done during the daytime, we need to know whether it's day or whether it's night, etc. And another major element is the date changes when it becomes night. So we need to know when has it changed from this day into the next day, which of course is tremendously consequential if it's, let's say, Shabbos. We need to know when Shabbos starts, when Shabbos ends. And also sometimes we need to know what date it is, which is also tremendously consequential. So if a baby is born during a murky period of time, so we need to know if a baby is born Monday night, is his birth going to be the following Monday or is it going to be the following Tuesday? And do we assume that he's born on Monday or do we assume that he's born Monday night, which is halachically Tuesday? So there are all kinds of consequences to knowing what date it is and when we switch from one day to the next. So these are two broad areas. When is it day and when is it night? And when does it switch from one date to the next date? Two very important, possibly differently regulated areas of halacha, so therefore it's crucial we know when does it switch from one point to the next. So this area is governed by two major sfeikas, which we'll talk about on Friday. One area is just the broad question, according before you get into any Rishonim, just when does day switch to night? Because it doesn't seem, despite the fact there's an opinion of the Gemara like this, it doesn't seem like that happens in a split instant. It seems to be there's a process of day turning into night. So since that process takes some time, sometimes it seems like it's clearly day outside. And in the middle of the night, it seems like it's clearly night. But there are times when it's clearly transitioning from one to the other, and that period takes some period of time. What's the status of all of that time? At what point does it switch from one to the next? And then if we could answer that question, we have another major area of issue, area of question, is that there is a debate among the Rishonim when these markers are. We'll assume the beginning of this process is called Shkia, meaning literally sinking, the sinking of the sun, and the end of this process is called Seis HaKochavim, when the stars come out. So even if we could decide, okay, Shkia is what we're interested in, or Seis HaKochavim is what we're interested in, when is Shkia? When is Seis HaKochavim? That's a topic of debate among the Rishonim, and God willing, on Friday we'll explain a little bit how that debate plays out. Okay, I will see you guys then. Have a fantastic day.